ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Jenny Brown, the co-founder and director of Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary and author of The Lucky Ones.
That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news. For the past 3 years, the dairy industry has been hoping to sell diet milk under the guise of just plain milk, so that chocolate and strawberry varieties that contain artificial sweeteners would no longer need to carry that on the label. Last week, the Food and Drug Administration acknowledged a 2009 petition from the International Dairy Foods Association and the National Milk Producers Federation that seeks to drop the FDA requirement to label milk and other dairy products as artificially sweetened when they contain sweeteners such as Splenda or aspartame. The FDA currently lets the dairy industry use the label unmodified milk for unsweetened milk or milk that contains natural sweeteners with calories like sugar and high fructose corn syrup. Some researchers have found that artificial sweeteners alter people's brain chemistry, making them crave higher calorie foods, which in turn makes them more prone to obesity and diabetes. Aspartame is also thought to cause problems such as headaches and possibly even brain tumors. The dairy lobby claims that allowing aspartame in milk would make it a healthier product and reduce childhood obesity by offering milk with fewer calories. The move comes as milk's popularity is in serious decline and other beverages, including soy and rice milk, take on more market share.
From The Guardian, Britons are increasingly turning to vegetarian alternatives amid concerns sparked by the horse meat scandal, according to food producers. Korn, the UK's biggest vegetarian ready meal brand, said it had seen sales growth more than double in the second half of February as shoppers snapped up its burgers, mince, and sausages made from a form of fungus. The company is having to increase the number of shifts at its fermenting plant to cope with demand. Other specialist brands have also enjoyed a surge in sales since January, when regulators found horse meat and ready-made burgers sold in supermarkets. Asda said sales of meat-free foods had been booming in recent weeks as the scandal had widened to include well-known brands including Findus and Bird's Eye. Fry's, a South African brand which sells frozen vegetarian sausages and pies mainly to health food shops such as Holland and Barrett, said sales had risen 30% since the beginning of February, three times the pace of its growth over the last few years. Cauldron Foods, another brand owned by Korn that includes specialist vegetarian options such as tofu as well as vegetarian sausages, has seen sales lift at 6% after months without growth. Meanwhile, Veggie Day, a German brand which recently launched in co-op stores, said sales were greater than forecasts and had seen a burst of interest from retailers. Fry's also benefited from a deal to supply meat-free pies to food distributor after the UK food service wholesaler found traces of pork and halal pies it was supplying to prisons. Kevin Brennan, the chief executive of Korn, said the horse meat scandal had served to highlight the rising cost of meat protein, particularly beef. High beef prices are thought to have been a key factor behind the contamination of ready meals with cheaper horse meat. Raising a cow requires the use of relatively large amount of feed crops such as wheat or soybeans, and as the world's population grows, competition for those crops will increase. At the same time, demand for meat is on the rise, particularly in parts of Asia. Still, meat-free ready meals have some way to go. A YouGov poll commissioned by Korn about a week ago found that just 15% of those questioned were more likely to consider an alternative to meat as a result of the horse meat saga.
BBC News reports that the most accurate assessment of the impact of commercial fishing on sharks suggests that about 1 million sharks are being killed each year. Researchers say that this rate of exploitation is far too high, especially for a species which reproduces late in life. The major factor driving the trade is ongoing demand for shark fins for soup in Chinese communities. Many sharks that are caught have their fins removed at sea, with the body being dumped overboard. These fish are often not included in official reports. However, the scientists estimate a mortality range of between 63 and 273 million sharks in 2010. While the number of sharks being caught has not changed substantially between 2000 and 2010, the authors of the research argue that the commercial fishing fleets are simply changing location and the shark species they target in order to keep up with the demand. The fear is that eventually these shark species will crash. According to Dr. Chapin from Stony Brook University, a lot of sharks that are prized in the trade take more than a decade to reach maturity. They're not reproducing fast enough to keep up with the rate that fishermen are pulling them out of the ocean. While fins are still being cut off sharks at sea, several countries, including Canada, the U.S., and the European Union, have tried to restrict this by law. But this has not had the desired effect. As Dr. Chapin explains, the problem is that the fins are so valuable that now people are not finning the sharks at sea, they're keeping the whole shark. But the shark is still dead. The finning bans have not stopped the root problem. There are proposals to regulate the trade of 5 of the most endangered species of shark. Let's hope that the demand for shark fin soup drops and that the sharks will be able to recover their previous population densities.
Coming up next, we feature a conversation with Jenny Brown, co-founder and director of Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary and author of the new book, The Lucky Ones. That's coming up next on ACT Radio.
Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Jenny Brown. Thanks for being with us, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got involved in animal issues?
Yeah, it began when I was 10, strangely enough, but I had a relationship. I had cancer at the time. I lost my leg as a child to cancer. I was really sick, 2.5 years of surgeries and chemotherapy and not having any hair and not being able to go to school and taking a long time to be fit with my first prosthetic leg, I was allowed to adopt a kitten. I'd never had a pet in my life. And it was the incredible amount of time I had when I was home having a chemo treatment as an outpatient that my mother would sleep all day because she worked the night shift. My sister would be gone in school. And I spent a lot of time with this little cat named Boogie, who I had for 18 years.
Wow.
And Boogie was, you know, sort of planted this seed that animals have emotions. Mm-hmm. They're not much different than us. You know, I was born into a Southern Baptist family and community. And, you know, I was taught to believe that only humans possess souls. And I began to question that at a really young age. But it wasn't until I was in college, I started reading about, and this is in Louisville, Kentucky, I started reading about issues concerning animals. And initially, it was reading about animal experimentation for the medical field and realizing that there was a number of animals that most likely suffered and underwent tests and were killed for those chemo drugs that potentially saved my life.
Wow.
And, you know, from there I read on and was disgusted by, you know, the circus that I loved to go to as a child, the zoo that I loved to frequent. Everything sort of became clear to me that we ruthlessly exploit animals in many, many ways. And it wasn't something that was ever discussed growing up. It wasn't something I thought about. And I, you know, I think the majority of the population can say the same thing, and that's one of our biggest problems is the invisibility of it all and the lack of discussion. So I got involved. I ended up moving to Chicago, went to film school, and got involved there in some activist things, protesting circuses, doing fur protests, filming them, and then getting involved with an animal advocacy organization doing some undercover video. And this was in the early 90s, and that's when I started to really get involved.
That must be very difficult to go undercover. Were you in, auction blocks or slaughterhouses or where?
Well, initially, in the early 90s, one of the bigger jobs that I had done that was, because there's a lot of unsuccessful missions, but I was flown to North Dakota, and I got inside of a Premarin facility. Premarin is a drug that millions of women take that's a estrogen replacement for when they're going through the change. And it's a new form of factory farming. It's basically they impregnate horses and they collect their urine because their urine is very high in estrogen in pregnant horses in colder regions. And a lot of women don't realize that this very popular drug called Premarin comes from the urine of pregnant horses.
Mm-hmm.
So breaking into one of those facilities and seeing the conditions that the horses lived in, that was my first real successful mission. It wasn't until, after working in film and television for almost a decade, it wasn't until I got involved with Farm Sanctuary that I went undercover again. I'd been involved in animal advocacy and animal rights, donated to a number of different charities, but when I learned about Farm Sanctuary and their focus being specifically on food production animals, it was around that time that I was realizing that as animal advocates, our attention needs to turn towards the animals that are being killed for food, because in sheer number alone, the 10 billion land animals that are killed for human consumption every year and the lack of awareness about it, the disconnect, that's where I realized that my advocacy, I wanted to turn my advocacy towards those issues specifically. And Farm Sanctuary was doing that work and doing it incredibly well. I learned a lot from their newsletters, their website, understanding how critical the situation is in terms of how bad it's gotten, in terms of the age of industrialization, how we basically put animals into, we treat them like widgets on a factory line, and everything is done for profit and efficiency with no regard for the welfare of these animals. And so in 2002, cutting to the chase here, in 2002, Farm Sanctuary sent me to Texas for a week by myself, rented a truck, wore some overalls, and made a purse. I have a purse, and I learned this from doing undercover work in the early 90s, but had a little DV camera mounted in the bottom of a purse with the hole cut out. You're not supposed to have cameras, video cameras, still cameras at the livestock auctions, but I had a little spy purse, and I would basically, the goal was to film downed animals, and those are the animals that are too weak or sick to actually get up and walk onto the trucks headed to slaughter. So the way they're dealt with is so barbaric in terms of using bulldozers, chaining them around the neck or around the leg, hearing bones break, seeing hips, legs pop out of hip joints, seeing animals that are suffering so bad from cancer or from other debilitating diseases. Farm Sanctuary was taking that footage that I was shooting that week to congressional hearings to try to pass the Downed Animal Protection Act, which they had been working on for decades. Because even if you don't care about how the animals are treated, which you should, the fact that these are sick and non-ambulatory animals making their way into food production is how mad cow disease started spreading. There is no vet there that's checking as to why the animals are debilitated. So anyway, that week in Texas, seeing what I saw, documenting what I did, scarred me and made me quit my career in television production and dedicate my life solely to being a voice for these animals and doing whatever I could to speak on behalf of farmed animals.
That's noble, but it's also depressing. I'd rather be in television.
Well, I don't know, man. The egos can be pretty intense. The constant competition for creative input. And when you realize that there's something that is so wrong, and for me, you know, I'm an abolitionist. I'm an abolitionist like there were abolitionists of slavery. I don't want to just end factory farming when we have no nutritional need to consume animals, when we've evolved to the point where in industry and, you know, in our diets, we have no need to kill other animals, you know, for our health or for any other reason, to wear their skins or whatever. You know, we have synthetic alternatives in terms of what we wear, and we have so many much more healthy and environmentally sustainable ways of eating that don't involve imprisoning, enslaving, exploiting, and ultimately killing other beings that share this earth with us. And my feeling is that unless you have some fundamental religious doctrines that you go by, you gotta look and start thinking, just because it's always been this way doesn't make it right. Mm-hmm. And perhaps they're here with us and not for us. And so this is, I do, I feel like this is why I was put on this earth. This isn't about me, but this is what drives me on a daily basis.
Well, and it's so true that, you know, there are so many alternatives, yet people seem so set in their ways and so resistant to contemplating removing animal products from their diet.
We're deeply indoctrinated, and, you know,
all you have to do is watch TV for an hour at night, and you'll see so many commercials for triple bacon burgers and cheese and on and on. It's just like you said, the indoctrination through the media is just so intense.
Brainwashing, yeah.
You know, I mean, we don't see commercials for broccoli or quinoa, and it's all the foods that are killing us, destroying our environment. It's so detached from the fact that that was a living animal. These products, that cheese, that bacon, you know, that burger, doesn't in any way resemble an animal. You know, people don't think about the fact that those cuts are a part of an individual who loved life and feared death just like you and I do, mm-hmm. who's just as intelligent and emotional as our beloved dogs and cats.
I find it so hard to understand why people who have companion animals don't make that connection that they're people too.
Well, it often takes some advocacy or outreach to get people to make that connection, because I grew up and loved animals and ate them every day of my life and never made that connection. Of course, I was younger, but it needs to be pointed out because it's so deeply ingrained in our culture. It's part of our cultural identity, these things that we eat. You know, because slaughterhouses don't have glass walls, because animals are living in massive concentration camps that are off the beaten path, and, you know, where thousands of animals are living, how often is it that people actually see live pigs and cows and chickens, get up close and personal with them, and are also in an environment like a sanctuary where the animals are our friends, they're treated with the utmost respect and compassion. Even if people did visit farms and saw these animals up close, they're being treated as commodities and production units. They're fearful of people. They're tagged, you know, in their ears. They have rubber bands around their testicles. They're suffering in some way. So few farms have free-roaming animals anyway, you know. 85% of dairy operations are dry lots these days where they, you know, they just go right outside to eat their hay and their grain on concrete, and then they're marched right back in to milk, you know. They're not out grazing in the fields. They don't have access to pasture. It's so invisible. We're so detached from these animals, and agribusiness loves it that way.
Mm-hmm. One thing I found that was really interesting is this giant outcry about horse meat in Europe.
Yeah,
there's no outcry about all the hamburger they're eating, but my gosh, you know, you can't have 0.3% horse meat in your burger. People go, you know, ballistic.
Oh, it's just been driving me crazy. I mean, and of course, you can see the whole animal advocacy world, those of us who focus on food production animals and promoting veganism, it's just laughable.
Yeah.
And it's also just another example of how we compartmentalize animals from those. We divide them into those we love and those we choose not to think about and just think that they're here for food.
Mm-hmm.
We never stop to question that. And we're a civilization that was built on slavery. The women didn't have rights to vote. Only in the past 150 years have we seen changes in those issues. So this is the next social justice movement.
Mm-hmm.
This is the justice movement of our time because it affects the most number of beings. Don't get me wrong. I am all for gay marriage and gay rights and issues with women being paid the same as men, but we've made great strides in those areas where the strides that we've made in animal advocacy are happening right now in any kind of significant way. And this is the time when it's hitting the media. And, you know, there's a really clever quote by Jonathan Safran Foer. I don't know if I have it accessible, but he basically is asking us, this is the time when in history it will be asked of us, what did you do when you learned about animals being killed for food? We are the ones of who it will be rightly asked, what did you do?
Well, tell us a little bit about your new book, The Lucky Ones, and how you came about to write that and what the main message is that you're trying to get across to the readers.
Well, it's funny, because I have an artificial leg, this is what brought the attention. You know, I have a little goat that I had an artificial leg made for. Since then, we also have a sheep that wears an artificial leg, and we have animals that wear leg braces and orthotics. But that's what started this. I didn't have the intention of writing a book, not at this point in my life anyway, but it was an opportunity that came to me. And they wanted to hear my personal story, because when you look at the synopsis of that, girl grows up in Louisville, Kentucky, eats meat, comes from a religious background and community where I was taught to believe that that's what they're here for. You know, I lose my leg, have a relationship with a cat, go on to read about it, get involved in activism, have a whole career in film and television, leave that. You know, there's interesting aspects of it.
Uh-huh.
So they wanted my personal story in it. But to me, it was just a vehicle to talk about what's happening in animal agriculture and to try to tweak, try to open people's hearts and minds to looking at these animals differently. And so The Lucky Ones talks about the lucky animals that have come to our sanctuary that we've been able to rescue and change their lives. They are given a second chance at life. These animals have, you know, learned to trust humans again when many of them have no reason to.
Mm-hmm.
And their individual personalities and their interspecies relationships, the relationships they have with one another. You know, we've got some animals, for instance, Louise the sheep. She is the sheep that is inclined to, like, not even want to hang out with the flock, which is very unsheep-like. She wants human attention because it was a human that got her out of, she was frozen to the ground, missing most of her ear and had a bum leg, but it was a kind man that took her out of that situation and nursed her back to health. She loves people. And again, it's showing people how differently these animals behave when they're not treated as commodities and production units, but when they're treated with love and compassion. And the unique opportunity of sanctuaries is that people come through our doors, they meet these animals who have names, who are treated and seen as individuals, the individuals that they are. And while they're learning the story of how Andy the pig got to be here, and while they're Andy is turning over for a belly rub and oinking these happy grunts, and, you know, this is the incredible opportunity because they become a tangible thing. They become individuals. And while they're meeting them and hearing their incredible rescue story, they learn at that moment, just like you do in the book, about how millions of animals, just like Andy the pig, just like Ophelia the chicken, are living in this very moment, what their lives are like. And it's a life of misery and isolation and deprivation, and people are largely unaware. So the book is a vehicle to talk about that. You hear the amazing animal stories But at the same time, you're learning about the plight of farmed animals, the sheep, the goats, the meat chickens, the egg-laying chickens, the beef cows, the dairy cows, all of them, and how our society exploits them. But there's happy stories also, you know, again, of these animals that have come from misery and have been given an opportunity, what they've brought to our lives, what they've taught us. They're incredible. We could talk for days, couldn't we, about our beloved cats and dogs? These animals are absolutely no different. Mm-hmm. The only difference is in our minds. And how dare we shake our fists at the Koreans and Chinese for killing and eating dogs and cats. And that's my intention, is to point out the hypocrisy in that and to make people realize that these animals are just as deserving of our love and our compassion as our dogs and cats.
And Jenny, where can our listeners go to learn more about the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary and your book, The Lucky Ones?
WoodstockSanctuary.org is our website. We have a massive learn section on there so that people can go and they can read about, why should we not buy wool? What's wrong with eggs? Okay, well, what's wrong with free range eggs that are labeled free range? We dispel a lot of those humane myths out there and allow people to understand that there is no compassionate eggs on the market. Mm-hmm. All the males are being ground up alive. I mean, you know, we could go into that. We could do a whole show about that. But WoodstockSanctuary.org is the place where you can read more about our work. We are a national organization, and meet some of the animals that are here, read their stories, vegan recipes, all the benefits of a vegan diet. And then also you can read about my book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals, right on our website where you can purchase one. It's an autographed copy. And it also, the profits go directly to our care for our 200-plus animals that we have here at the shelter. And we actually have another 100 at another location. We're dealing with a hoarding case right now and are staffing a second location. So, you know, if you are somebody that has expanded your circle of compassion to include farm animals, support organizations, support sanctuaries that are doing this work for farm animals, and definitely pick up my book that's full of self-deprecating humor, and it's not a book that's all buzzkill. It's moving stories, but it's important information that we all truly have a moral obligation to know.
We've been talking with Jenny Brown, the co-founder and director of the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Jenny. We appreciate you being on the show.
And all the work you do for the animals. Thanks, Jenny. It's colorectal cancer awareness month, and a plant-based diet has been shown to help lower the risk of these cancers.
So if you'd like more information about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website, vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.